Third Coast Digest is brought to you in part by 91.7 FM, WMSE Frontier Radio.
Gino Salamone, welcome. Thanks for coming in to talk to me.
It's an honor, Mark.
Thank you very much. I like to be honored. Now, you, I was trying to think how to introduce you in terms of what you do, because you do a lot of, you have a lot of different venues for your output, for what you do.
True.
You're on Channel 12.
Yes.
You're on KTI? No,
well, that died.
That's KTI,
no longer,
is gone.
Yes,
right.
KLH.
KLH with Dave and Carol.
Right.
And what else? Where?
I'm on GN with Steve and Johnny. They do this show overnight, WGN in Chicago.
Okay, right.
And the prime hour of 3:45 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
So you know you're good when they put you right in that prime slot like
that's
that.
That's right. Because that's when everybody's up.
Well, you know what? I will say this. I hear from more older people in the Milwaukee area who can't sleep at night and are listening to that. So
I was going to think you'd hear from people, from younger people coming over to the bars.
That's
if they
true,
could find the phone.
Right? Yes. Plus, they don't listen to AM radio.
Right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. But now what you do, you have the best job of anybody that I know, because you get to go all kinds of places and you get to watch movies for
right.
a living, basically.
Right. And then talk to those people who are in the movies and make the movies.
Right. Yeah. And because you just came from Moscow.
Right.
For the opening there of Transformers.
Yes.
And who was there? Who did you
okay.
talk?
Okay. Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
Michael Bay did not do interviews. He sat down, did a couple, got up, said, I'm not doing any more. Sat down, I'll do one more. I may do another. No, I'm done. His attention span, he was up and down. Talked to John Malkovich, yeah. Tyrese Gibson, okay. Josh Duhamel, Rosie, the new actress whose name is escaping me, but not the shot of her behind that Michael Bay takes in 3D from from up a staircase. Unbelievable.
I heard about that.
How does
shot.
He get away with this?
I don't know. How does he get away with making a movie that's so loud, that's so mechanical? And
right.
But very reputable people have said the 3D is better than any 3D they've seen.
It is. But what was interesting, I've never had this happen before. Shia LaBeouf was like, oh, yeah, that second movie was awful. You know, it was horrible. And he admitted it.
Oh, yeah.
And he brought it up. He said right. that what had happened was the studio had a firm date of opening. They didn't have a script. And they said, you're going to open on this date. And they just rushed to get it done
right.
without having anything
without thinking
ready.
It through. Right.
Right.
Well, now, I was going to ask you that. Do you get the impression that actors, when you interview them for a movie, are like when people interview athletes after a game, they
right.
all say the same
yes.
thing. Well, we're
yes.
getting our heads in the game, whatever
right.
they say.
Right.
They think, do actors respond the same way, or do you get do you think you get an honest response?
I don't know. They're actors.
That's right, and they're good at it.
No, but I will tell you this. Bobby Rivers, who used to work in Milwaukee at Channel 12
right.
years ago, did this. And I learned from Bobby that you've got to go in and throw them something different because they are being asked the same question. So if you can throw them off a little bit or make them laugh or come up with something, a different tact,
right.
you have a good shot of getting a different answer.
You can disarm them a little
right.
bit. Well, that's good. That's good to know. And you do that.
No, you know, start off with a sense of humor. Robin Williams started – the first time I interviewed him, I walked in. He was dead tired and his arms were down at his side. It was the movie Jack where he played a 10-year-old boy.
Right.
So I knew I had to do something. So I said, Robin, do you know how convincing you were as a 10-year-old? And he said, no. I said, Michael Jackson has called and would like you to spend the weekend at his house. And he sat up and he started doing all these voices. It was like, okay, you know what?
Robin Williams, you found the button, turned him on.
That's right.
Right.
And you know when you turn that button on,
with
there's
Robin.
No turning off.
I know. I've been worked with him. And yeah, you got to leave the room. It's the only way to get him
right.
to stop. But you got him. Well, that's good. And now when you go back and see him on other movies, subsequent movies, does that carry?
It does.
Yeah.
He remembers. And he'll give you what you want. And you probably know that from working with him. If you go in there and set him up, he will not disappoint you. If you're a little more serious, he'll give you that.
Right.
But I like going that fun route. And I told him a story about a Milwaukee children's show host that I tracked down from my childhood who – we went to lunch. He said the filthiest thing I have ever heard out of anybody's mouth, let alone a man in his upper 80s.
A man who entertained children.
Who entertained children.
Life.
So he passed away, sadly. And several years later, I was interviewing Robin for Death to Smoochie, where
right.
he plays a bad children's show host.
Right.
I told him the story about this children's show host. He started to cry laughing so hard. And then he became this children's show host. And it was so filthy, I couldn't air a second of it. Not one second. And I'll tell you what he said when we can say those words.
That's right. We have a license to say almost anything on the
web. Well, you can't say this. I'll tell you right now.
Okay.
No, there's no way.
The microphone, the wires will burn.
They
will.
Exactly.
Okay. But do you have
what
to
happened in the studio?
That's right. You'll have to tell me later.
Definitely.
Now, how is Malkovich? Because he can be a little recalcitrant sometimes.
But he, if I knew what that word meant, I would agree with you.
Okay.
But, no, you know, he's very quiet.
Yeah.
And very deliberate, very deep in thought with his answer, and you have to adjust to that. Don't try filling those gaps in because he has more to say.
Okay.
And he was very, very nice, very pleasant. Right. A lot of people were afraid of him because of some of the roles he's played.
And he puts out a bit of an aura of, I'm a little weird and I could eat your eyeball.
Exactly right. That's right. But thankfully, I've talked to him enough times to know
just stay calm,
relax, and let him talk.
So now you've been doing this for a while.
I think the first movie was Clueless, which was
the
90s.
Alicia
Silverstone.
Silverstone, right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Yeah, that's a long time. Do you feel like you actually have a bit of a relationship other than you only see them at Christmas time or when the movie comes out?
Right.
But still, do you feel like there's a...
Yeah, sometimes. And there are others that, you know... We could have the greatest interview. I could run into them on the street the next day, and they'd have no idea.
Know, right.
Because they're doing 40 or 50 of these at a time.
Yeah.
So if you can do, again, the Bobby Rivers tact of going in there, being a little different, maybe making it a little more pleasurable for them,
right?
They do tend to remember.
Well, now, so what did you do with Sandra Bullock?
All right. The first time I interviewed her, she started flirting with me, and I said, stop. I was stunned. You know, I had my arm fall off the chair. So it was the end of the interview. I had time for one question, 15 seconds left. I said, I've got one more question. I've seen Demolition Man, Speed, While You Were Sleeping, and now The Net. Will you marry me? And she said, if I can decorate the house and pick where we live, yes.
Oh, okay.
So the next night she was on Letterman. A friend of mine books the guests on Letterman, went into her dressing room and said, congratulations. I heard you're engaged to my friend Gino. And her parents were in the room. And she said, I was going to tell you guys, but I was waiting for the right moment. So the next time I went in to talk to her, she started laughing. She remembered. I said, and then on camera, I said, you know, last time I interviewed you, I proposed and you accepted. And I never heard from you again. She said, that's because I never saw a ring. And I reach in my pocket. And I pull out one of those candy rings with that huge rock of
big
candy.
Rock, right.
And she tears it open, puts her hand out. I put the ring on her finger. She sits on my lap and says, oh, honey, I'm so happy, okay? So I can't feel any better.
No.
And she wears the ring the entire day and tells all these journalists that we're engaged. By the time – this was at the Regency Hotel in New York. By the time I flew home that night, on my answering machine was a reporter for the National Enquirer because somebody was – passing that along.
Of course. And that's news.
It would be huge news, believe me. If they saw me, come on, no way. It would be the biggest shock since Julia Roberts and Lyle Lovett.
That's exactly what popped into my mind. It wouldn't be that big a shock. Julia Roberts married Lyle Lovett.
Right. So I've kept that going with her, and it's been a blast.
So every time you see her, it's one more.
Except there's pressure. What do you do next? You know, I knew she loved The Wizard of Oz, so I got the original lollipop kid to come in, sing to her, and give her a lollipop.
Oh, gosh.
What else have I? Oh, I had Florence Henderson come in as my mother and check her out and open her mouth and check her teeth. And, you know, it's always been fun. So
that's
I always
great.
Look forward to it.
And she's somebody, I mean, you can tell from watching her work, she's somebody you could do that with. You could
right.
get, whereas, like you say, with Malkovich, she kind of had
Well, I'll give you an example of that going wrong if you would like.
Okay, yeah.
I had interviewed Meg Ryan. She'd been working all night. I was in Los Angeles. She was in New York. And they said, she's dead. She's so tired. If you can make her laugh, you've got her. So I knew she couldn't see me. And I said, Meg, do I have something in my teeth? And she sat up and she goes, yes, you do. I said, did I get it? She said, no. And then she was laughing and she was awake and it was fun.
So she was playing.
So a month later, I'm interviewing Kevin Spacey. He's in London. Well, I don't know how stupid am I to think that that's going to work with Kevin Spacey. I go back to the gag and I say, Kevin, do I have something in my teeth? And he said, I hope you have intelligent questions in your teeth. And honestly, I shrunk down in that chair. The sweat broke out immediately on my forehead. The worst. I couldn't wait till it was over.
Yeah, how do you follow
you,
that?
You can't recover after
that. Yeah, and you don't know because probably on another day, Kevin Spacey might play with you.
No, no, that was stupid. That was just dumb.
Yeah. Well, if it works one time, you want to try it again.
Right.
But it's a great gag, and you got her.
Right.
Anybody else that... sort of pops into your mind?
But yeah. I mean, people, the most frequent question is, who's the worst to talk to?
Okay.
And it's Tommy Lee Jones.
I was going to ask about Tommy Lee Jones because he is a monster.
It hurts me. It hurts to say his name out loud. LA Magazine did a cover story, and I'll never forget it. I wish I would have kept it. It said 100 things to fear in Los Angeles. Number one was earthquakes. Two was mudslides. You go down the list. Number nine was Tommy Lee Jones at a press junket. And they're absolutely right. He ruined my birthday at No Country for Old Men. I didn't have to do the interview. I could have run to the airport. It was borderline whether I'd make my flight, but I stuck it through. I walked in, and he's just, those beady eyes are staring at me, devoid of any joy whatsoever.
Right.
And on the way out, the man next to me had recognized me from TV. He said, who's the best to talk to? Who's the worst? I said, I'm going to talk to the worst right now, Tommy Lee Jones. He said, that's a coincidence. He said, my son plays football for Harvard, and last year, Tommy Lee Jones did this great speech, got them really pumped up. I thought, perfect.
Yeah,
who's
going to
have
something.
That? I'm going to go with that. So camera starts rolling. I say that story, and he looks at me and goes, I have no recollection of that. And he just stares at me. And Mark immediately, honestly, sweat on my forehead.
Sweat on your...
So I go into some long question about his character in No Country for Old Men, and he looks at me and goes, and? And I don't say anything. And? Oh, it's like, and I wanted to say, and you're a you-know-what, but I didn't do it.
I did a picture with Rip Torn, who had a reputation for being a real monster in his day when he was younger. And he said, I'm so relieved that I'm no longer the meanest man in Hollywood. And now Tommy Lee Jones is the meanest man in Hollywood. And this was 10 or 15 years ago.
Wow. Yeah. Well, he keeps that mantle. He's number one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I think he carries it with a certain amount of pride.
I think he enjoys making people squirm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I haven't been subjected to a lot of press. I mean, I'm not that kind of actor. But I can understand how it's a very difficult thing. You do the work, is the acting work, and then you have to sort of promote the work. And sometimes you're promoting the work a year after the movie's been finished.
Yes.
And so you got to get yourself back into that head. And
but you're an actor.
Right.
You have to talk to somebody for 5 minutes, act like you're having fun, or act like you want, or don't do it at all because that's not going to sell the movie.
Right. And you do actually have the choice of not doing it, although sometimes it's in your contract that you
right,
have to do
right.
so much.
We did a thing with Old School. It was Will Ferrell, Vince Vaughn, and Luke Wilson.
Right.
And somebody came up with this brainstorm that let's build a college dorm room setting with these different rooms, and you walk around and interact with them. Well, it wasn't working, and they weren't into it. And Chris Rock was staying in the hotel, and he came down, and I was about to go up, and I was watching him watch them, and he just starts screaming, sell the bleeping movie. You're here to sell the movie. You know? It's not that hard.
Yeah. It is amazing, though, what they do to promote the movie. I mean, you understand why ticket prices are so high. Because didn't you go for another Vince Vaughn movie?
Yes, Bora Bora.
Couples Retreat.
Right.
They flew you to Bora Bora for the press junket.
Yes.
And put you up at the...
In these beautiful huts on the water.
Right.
But I still said what I thought of the movie.
Oh, good.
You have to. Otherwise, you lose any integrity whatsoever. No one's going to trust your opinion.
Right.
If because of a trip, you say a movie was great when it was not. The trip was great. The movie was not.
Well, sometimes you see the same guy's name in the blurbs in the New York Times.
Yes, I know all those people.
Right. And it begins to seem as though they write the blurbs.
Right.
Because they're getting it's like it's paid for.
The quote horse. I mean, and in fact, there's a website that has these people, and it lists all their quotes for a year.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, who's quote whore of the year. They give out that category. It's really a funny thing to check out.
Yeah. But it's good. I mean, it's good that you can't be bought.
Well, and I don't give a quote because I am, you know, I am accepting the trip. I am accepting the hotel.
Right.
You know, I think there's a conflict of interest there. If you're flown in, you might be swayed sometime. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be subjected to that because I see those people who do it over and over for movies that are horrible.
And you don't have to because you keep getting invited back.
I do.
You just got to, they flew you to Moscow.
Well, this year, and this is the craziest year of all, we flew to Brazil for Fast Five.
Aye.
Yes. The Cannes Film Festival for Kung Fu Panda 2.
Oh, yeah.
And then now this
and
last
now
trip
to Moscow.
Moscow. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So they're spending even more money on these junkets.
Right.
They must get it back.
They do. I mean, obviously, there's enough pieces on the air,
yeah,
you know, that they can rationalize the cost of the jacket.
Right, right. How many journalists do they were in Moscow, would you say?
I would say probably 30, 40.
Okay. All right.
At the most.
That's nice. So yeah, that's like the A-list. You're like, I would guess that's the A-list. You're
well,
on the A-list?
It's the other thing was a lot of people could not accept it because of the commitment of time. Thankfully, I don't have a full-time job that I have to be at that I can that I can be away for this
right.
long.
Right. Now, do some of the other people who write here in Milwaukee, does Dwayne Dudek show up at these things?
No, he's not. The journal does not allow him to do that,
okay,
to accept that. But okay, he will sometimes, he'll pay his way to the Toronto Film Festival and he'll do it that way.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes he'll go to Chicago to do some interviews.
Right, right, when they do something
right
there. Right.
But, you know, that's the nice thing. It's like you would think sometimes there would be rivalry among critics. I love the group of people we have in this town. I see you at those screenings.
Right.
It's a good group. We're very fortunate here.
Yeah, well, it is nice. And I would guess that there's the same thing when you travel. You see the same people again and again.
Right.
When you go to these different places.
Yes,
right?
Except they're getting younger and I'm getting older.
You're getting old.
I'm not kidding. And I never thought I'd be that guy. You know, when I was a boy. But they don't know movies. Some of these people have no idea of film history, and it's really depressing.
That's scary. I know. I mean, it's real scary. Because I talk to even my – well, my son watches black and white movies now, but he resents it when I put him down.
I know.
Black and white.
I know. I'll tell you – give me an example. It was the Star Wars re-release, and there was this woman outside the room. Before she walked in, she came up to me and asked me if Dark Vader – D-A-R-K, if Dark Vader was a good guy or a bad guy. You know what? I think you should know that before you go in to talk to George Lucas.
That's right.
Call me crazy.
Yeah. But you should
on.
Do a little bit of research.
I mean, right.
And
is
that's
that not
hard.
Basic? It's not like Boba Fett or whatever that character. It's not some
Boba
obscure
Fett.
Character. Thank you. See, I got it wrong.
That's
and I'm proud of that.
I have a 16-year-old son. I have to know that stuff.
Well, yeah, she should know whether Darth Not Dark
Dark,
Vader, Darth,
Darth
Vader.
Darth Vader is a good guy. You can't tell by looking at him
right.
and by the name, even if it's Dark Vader.
Thank you.
Right. Well, that is scary that the people who are writing, because people read and listen to the radio and listen to, and they get an idea about what to go see.
Yeah, people care about movies. They do.
Sure.
You know, all the research in news is that this doesn't matter. Well, you know what? Try going to a movie on a Saturday night. Try going on a Friday night. It's jammed. People
right.
do love movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, they love it, especially in the summertime.
Right.
And that's why all these big
popcorn movies.
Popcorn movies, yeah. And now, so are there any superheroes left to make movies about?
I'm superheroed out. When we did Thor, it's...
I was going to say, Thor broke my back.
Right. That was it. And now we've had Green Lantern since then.
Right.
We have Captain America coming up.
The Avengers. Josh Whedon might make the Avengers interesting.
Right.
Maybe.
Right. But again, when is it too much? It's like now this is the summer of the gross-out comedy.
Yeah.
You know, you had Hangover last year. Now this year we start with Bridesmaids, Hangover 2, Bad Teacher...
Right.
And now a Horrible Boss is coming up.
Right.
And each one trying to step further across the line.
Right. Yeah, no, I know. People always ask me because of my association with Animal House what I think about movies that gross out comedies today. Because Animal House, you look at that and it was tame. But people in order,
right.
in that competitive spirit, have gone all the way to old school.
Yep.
Which is, and further, which is just as far across the line as you can get.
How far can you go, though? When does this end?
And when do you get it that originality is more profitable?
Right.
I mean,
right.
Lucas made a ton of money on Star Wars 4, 5, and 6 because, I think, because there were no stars in it, because nobody had made a science fiction movie. And it was a surprise.
Right.
And
right.
it took off, and people, you know.
But
so,
no studio is gutsy enough anymore.
Uh-uh.
They
no.
just will not put up the money to give someone. You know, and that, here's the other thing. I hire you, Mark, because I like your vision as a director.
Right.
Then you make the movie, and I focus group everything. And I say, well, no, make that character a dog instead of a human being. you know, change the color of the hair. People don't like that redhead. And I'm taking your vision and then completely changing what it is I hired you for.
To do.
Yeah.
Right, right. There's a great story. There's a book called Wild Palms that William Faulkner wrote. And you remember Ray Stark. Now, most
right.
of the people listening probably don't know who Ray Stark, but Ray Stark was one of the big producers. He was the Jerry Bruckheimer of his day, basically.
Yes.
Somebody came in and pitched the Wild Palms. Wild Palms is about a doctor in New Orleans and the wife of a very, very rich man in New Orleans who fall in love. the very rich man drives them out of town, so they have to go on the road. The doctor, they live in Chicago in poverty, Arizona. He has to start performing abortions. This is in the 30s in order to just make a living. They end up back on the shores of the Gulf in Louisiana, close to home, and he performs an abortion on her, and she dies.
Oh, wow.
Ray Stark, and actually he didn't say this to me, but this was Nick Rogue told me the story because Nick Rogue was the director on that. But Ray Stark said, I love this story. That's so great. Could we make him a violinist?
See?
What?
That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, where did that come from? I don't know.
And who's this Faulkner? I've got somebody I can get write more realistic dialogue.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what happens.
Yeah, his sentences are way too long.
Right.
Well, now, where do you go next?
I am in Chicago for the Help. Then I go to New York for the Harry Potter red carpet.
That'll be a huge one.
Yeah. And then what else do I have? I've got one in Los Angeles. Oh, Captain America in Los Angeles.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, plenty of being on the road.
Most of these are big studio movies. They're the ones that have the money, that spend the money for the big junkets. Do any independents do it at all?
No.
They can't.
No.
They can't afford it.
They can do print, but they can't afford. Just the camera crews alone for these things are so expensive. And it's a shame. But that's my favorite part of my job. If I see something with you at the Oriental and it, you know, I'm so taken with it, I can go on the radio and say, you know what? You probably haven't heard of this movie.
Right.
Give it a try. That's the best part of the job.
Yeah, finding those surprises.
Right. That don't have any budget to promote themselves, getting the word out.
Yeah, and trying to turn people on to them.
Right.
So how does it work on these junkets? Are you in a room by yourself? Because Carrie Fisher was a good friend of mine for a long time during the early Star Wars, and I think she would say that she would sit at a table and they would come with everybody else in the same room. They would come by one at a time, and you had 5 minutes.
Well, that sounds more like print. These broadcast ones – You sit in a big room collectively, all these reporters, and then they say, okay, Mark, it's your turn. You come in, you sit in the hallway until you can walk in, you sit down, you have 5 minutes, speed, go. And then they shoot you with one camera, they shoot the talent with the other, and you walk out and you have your tapes.
And that's it.
Yeah, and then on to the next and the next. Sometimes there's 60 people. Now, do you know Dave Foley from Kids in the Hall?
Sure.
Okay, he's a friend of mine, and it was the end of the day, and I was one of the last, and he walks in, he goes, thank God. He said, I can say this to you. He said, you are the last customer at the whorehouse. He said, I've had my legs up all day. I've got nothing left. I got nothing. And, you know, imagine.
That's right.
50, 60 interviews sometimes, and you want to be fresh and you want to.
Yeah, you want to give them something.
Right,
that's your job.
Yeah.
And you're also right. The questions are bound to be the same.
Yes.
I mean, it's not the obligation of the journalist to come up with new questions.
Right.
But you take a night.
I try to remember. Like Richard Gere, I remember walking in, and I had read that he had played Santa Claus when he was 5 years old. It was the first thing. And I brought that up. I said, you were Santa Claus in grade school. He said, yes, and I was brilliant. And, it brought him around. You know, I'm a mind filled with facts that mean nothing to anybody.
Right.
Except once in a while I can pull one of those out.
Right. How many times have you talked to Richard Dreyfuss?
I'd say four.
Okay.
Maybe four times.
Because he told me a story once, maybe if next time you see him, about the first time he was ever on stage and he was acting his heart out like in sixth or seventh grade or eighth grade, and he felt this presence next to him, and it was his mother fixing his hair.
I love that.
I know. Real Jewish mother.
That is great.
Dickie.
I can't wait to talk to him.
Ask him if that's true or if he was just entertaining
a
bunch of us at a bar in New Haven. Gino, thanks for coming and talking to me.
Always a pleasure. And I cherish your friendship. I think we're so lucky to have you living in our town. I mean that.
Thank you. Well, it's been great for me to be here because getting to know people like you because you're a good friend too.
Look at how Hollywood is this?
Yeah, I know.
We're falling over each other to compliment. And let me just talk about what a great father you are.
Let me talk about what a great burger finder you are.
Oh, thank you very much.
You find great cheeseburgers.
I do, but you should be prouder of being the good father.
I will be.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mark.
Bye.